Chapter 1979, Comiskey Park. The game, Toronto Blue Jays 10, Chicago White Sox 2. Comiskey Park, Chicago, Illinois. Attendance 41,043. On Tuesday, April 10th, 1979. The weather, cold. Really cold. Hall of Famers, none. Game highlights. Outside Comiskey Park, more than two dozen Major League umpires were walking a picket line seeking higher pay and better benefits, which they eventually got. But inside the ballpark, the game's outcome could not be blamed on replacement umps. The 1979 Toronto Blue Jays, only 3 years into existence since joining with the Seattle Mariners in the 1977 expansion, were a really bad baseball team. The Chicago White Sox were, too. Game highlights? There were none. The White Sox were dreadful. Five Chicago pitchers walked 12 and gave up 9 hits and 10 runs. Only 4 were earned thanks to 2 White Sox errors. The team played so badly, owner Bill Veeck apologized to the fans and begged them to come back the next day for free. "We stunk the joint out," Veeck admitted. "We certainly couldn't play as bad as this 2 days in a row. Give us another chance, please." The story. For the second time in less than a decade, the baseball gods boldly decided this opening day streak should continue. If losing my home team Senators didn't end it, why let college get in the way? A 10th straight opening day was the furthest thing from my mind when I arrived in the fall of 1978 at the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana, nearly 100 miles from the closest Major League Baseball team. I was quickly immersed in a sports media subculture, working as a student assistant in the sports information department, a sports writer for the student newspaper, The Observer, and a sports voice on the ragtag student radio station WSND. My brother Hugh had been the sports information director at Villanova, the Notre Dame of the East, during the Wildcats' first basketball glory days in the early 1970s and helped get my foot in the door at ND. A cast of characters and friends would emerge from these work experiences to shape much of my personal and professional life for decades. Not surprisingly, I skipped my first college class on Monday, October 2nd, 1978. Options included staying in a dorm room glued to a small portable black and white TV set, watching the win or go home one game playoff at Fenway Park between the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox, or attending Professor Meredith Scovel's Economics 101 class. It was no contest. The game won. Yankees won too, as the Red Sox wrote another chapter in their storied curse. Among my co-workers in the sports information department at The Observer and WSND was sophomore Craig Cheval of Clarendon Hills, Illinois. His writing talent was immense, his sarcasm and humor sharp, and his passion for baseball comparable to mine. He was a fan of the Chicago White Sox, who, like the Senators, had very little experience in postseason play. In fact, his White Sox had been to the World Series only once since 1920. The Senators twice, 1924 and 1933. Craig was often quick to point out he had been to the Sox last World Series in 1959. His mother, Arlene, was pregnant with him when she attended a series game at Comiskey Park. As the gray South Bend winter melted into spring, talk of baseball began. Craig would tell me stories about the White Sox irreverent broadcast team of Harry Carey and Jimmy Pearsall. He gushed with pride describing Harry's antics on game day at Comiskey. His imitation of Harry was spot on. Craig had the three things that mattered most at the time: a passion for a team, a desire to have a good time, and a car. In the spring of 1979, we made it to Comiskey Park for opening day. The atmosphere around Comiskey was unlike anything I had experienced in Washington or Baltimore. RFK Stadium was situated on the banks of the Anacostia River, surrounded by parking lots and residential neighborhoods. Similarly, Memorial Stadium was surrounded by blacktop, then homes, then Lake Montebello about 4 blocks away. Comiskey was different. It was a ballpark, not a stadium. At least 50 years older than any baseball venue I'd visited. It sat along the Dan Ryan Expressway and was surrounded by small businesses and watering holes, each with their own unique opening day rituals, like throwing out the season's first Cubs fan. There was a special decadence and charm that reeked of tradition. I didn't realize it at the time, but 1979 marked the 60th anniversary of the infamous Black Sox scandal that played out, in part, here at Comiskey Park. 8 members of the 1919 White Sox were brought down for their part in a scheme to fix World Series games. Included in the controversial outcome was perhaps the greatest hitter of the era, Shoeless Joe Jackson, the motivating figure in the 1989 movie classic, Field of Dreams. Like the presidential openers in Washington, a sellout crowd was expected, and that added to the excitement regardless of the opponent, outlook, outcome, or weather. In Baltimore in the 1970s, even though the team was winning, the electricity associated with sellout crowds was rare. The atmosphere inside Comiskey was magical. Canned music had not yet arrived. Organist Nancy Faust, an enduring fan favorite from 1970 until 2010, would improvise and entertain. In the era before players picked their piped-in walk-up music, Nancy might decide for them. And she could be relentless, especially when taunting visiting players. Detroit Tigers outfielder Gates Brown had been incarcerated as a teenager. When he came to the plate in Chicago, she once played Elvis Presley's 1957 hit, Jailhouse Rock. When my gigantic hero Frank Howard would come to bat, she'd channel her inner Carole King with, I feel the earth move under my feet. Her rendition of the 1969 pop hit, Na Na Hey Hey, Kiss Him Goodbye, brought fans to their feet, taunting opposing pitchers as they exited the game. It became a baseball staple for decades in Chicago and elsewhere. On this day, the White Sox pitchers were so bad, she might have been tempted to play the Na Na song during one of the 2 pitching changes in the top of the 7th inning when the Blue Jays scored 3 times. But she refrained. I suspect because minutes later, the fans would rise for another Faust-supported ritual during the 7th inning stretch. Because of the cold and the lack of a rooting interest, I probably would have wanted to leave early, especially once the Blue Jays went up 5-1 in the top of the 7th. But then something magical happened that caused me to pledge allegiance to the White Sox. This slightly slurred, booming voice rolled through the ballpark.
All right, let's do it better this year. Let me hear you. All right, Nancy.
After she played an all-too-familiar introduction, future Hall of Fame broadcaster Harry Carey, with a microphone in one hand and perhaps a cold beer in the other, led more than 40,000 fans in a stirring rendition of Take Me Out to the Ballgame. Many were not in complete grasp of their faculties, but all were in complete control of the ritual. I was hooked. For box scores, play-by-play, and more, visit openingday5050.com.